Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, folks. Marty Griffin here. I wanted to kind of follow up with the issue in the last hour with a comment from JT. Agree. Problem here is our lack of values in home and wherever, but please don't leave guns, especially the AR kind, off the hook. They certainly contribute to the Rambo mentality. I agree. But, I mean, how do you get them off the streets, brother? Anytime there was a mass shooting, this is actually extraordinary. This is factual if you want to do a little homework on this. Anytime there was a mass shooting from Sandy Hook on, and while Obama was a president, folks went out and bought these guns in record numbers. It's insane. Because they believed that there would be some sort of legislation. They had faith in Congress to do something, and they didn't. And then after the mass shooting in Vegas, there was a big rush to buy these weapons. I don't understand the mentality, but... And because they, again, believed that Congress would have the wherewithal to pass some sort of legislation to even manage the, you could go out and buy this device that you put on a gun that you can turn into an automatic weapon, in essence, for $150. These stock, bump stock gizmos. There was a hue and cry from Republicans and Democrats. 80% of Americans supported the legislation. They haven't done anything about it. It's bizarre. So, I kind of gave up a long time ago. First of all, there's no armed group of special forces, police officers, either local, state, or federal, that are coming to someone's house to take away their guns unless they're a threat and they're threatening people, and that happens more than you can imagine. But it's just not happening. There are over 300 million guns, and the conversation wears me out. It just does. It beats you down. I just hope that we as a society can get into the heads and hearts and minds of our own kids and our own family and friends to kind of know where they're at in terms of where they're at. How fragile are they? After the fact of this mass shooting in Fayette, we're hearing that Timothy Smith was fragile and he obsessed on this poor young lady, Chelsea Klein, that he killed. Okay, but she was communicating with him on her Facebook page on January 25th, saying, quote, after this week, I really need to get taken out on a date or by a sniper. Either one is fine with me at this point. And Smith, who was her apparently ex-boyfriend and still her Facebook friend, writes back, I could do both. There you go. I don't know what to tell you about any of that. Other than this is where we're at. So obviously nobody was in his head. Nobody had any clue that this is where he was at. And this whole notion that he loved guns, okay. Millions and millions of Americans love guns. There are 300 million guns out there. But millions and millions of Americans don't plot to kill four people this way and then shoot themselves in the head. The only hope we have at this point, because I don't see some sort of effort to shut down gun sales, do you? Is to try to get better grounded with our kids. Where are they at? What are they doing on the internet? What are they saying when they're alone? What are the purchases they're making? Who are their friends? Old-fashioned parental police work. Alex Rybel's parents are going through all this right now. That young man, my gosh, that young man who, as we all now know, went into his high school and stabbed as many people as he could and wanted to kill them all. Man, his parents, jeez. I believe to this day, and you know, you can argue all you want that it's not true. I believe to this day he was bullied unmercilessly. I do. I just do. I heard it from the start. We reported it from the start. And I also believe that his parents really didn't know of his angst. I mean, look, describe Alex Rybal. And I will. Weighed about 100 pounds. So he was the little kid. And the little guys in high school, unless they were on the wrestling team or cross country, they kind of got picked on. Seriously. Add on top of that, he had real bad acne. And by the way, I'm not defending what he did. I'm just trying to lay this out. This is what happens to young folks today. And on top of that, he was really, really quiet. So he was bullied. He weighed less than 100 pounds. He had really bad acne. He was really, really quiet. But I just described probably 10 million kids in the schools. And he had wonderful parents. He had a wonderful brother in the same school. I don't know, man. How are we to know? I don't know. But certainly throwing him in jail and locking away the key isn't going to get to the bottom of it. Because we all get mad and punish him and put him to death and beat him up in the general population. Yeah, that'll help. And I get there's a certain amount of vengefulness out there, right? Let's get even. He deserves to be punished. Okay. But let's find out what was happening to the young man. What drove him to that? And if there are other cultural issues in schools that we can kind of embrace so that we can prevent this down the road. Can we engage with kids? What are we doing wrong here? What are we doing right here? Because we almost had a similar incident last week in Uniontown, folks. A 14-year-old boy was good to go. He was going to kill everybody he could. He was going to start out killing four people. I mean, I think we got to get to the root of it. What's the root of it? Not a bullet or a bus to drive into a crowd? Or a pair of scissors, or a butcher knife, or a fertilizer bomb. But what's the root of it in our own lives? Hey, it's important. Also important, blowing me away, what's happened with this horrible, horrible tragedy of these young women who were abused by this doctor. An amazing column in the New York Times. The Price of Raising an Army. Written by the first girl who went public. The first girl. An amazing, amazing column. We got to get into this next and what you can learn from this and prevent this from happening to your kids. Whew! All right. Here's what I want to do here. I want to bring in Joan Mills first, and then I want to kind of get into, no, let me start this column. Joan Mills is on, be right in. Joan Mills is one of my close friends. I value her advice because she's been, I value her advice and she has so much insight on kids and sex assault and these molestations because she's been at this for decades and has handled thousands and thousands of cases. On January 16th, women and girls across the country began congregating in a courtroom in Lansing, Michigan. Some of us were athletes. Some of us were not. Some of us were white. Some of us were black. Some of us were married. Some of us were still in high school. Many of us had never met, but we shared one core unifying experience, sexual assault at the hands of Larry Nassar, and we had one core unifying goal. By the way, this was written by Rachel Den Hollander. She's the first person to go public with this. It felt surreal at first, finally putting names and faces to the numbered Jane Doe designations I had wanted for so long to protect, but the pain we shared knit us together instantly. We knew what to do when someone began to weep or shake in court because each of us had cried those tears. We knew what to say when a grieving survivor expressed guilt or doubt because we had experienced the same shame. Over the course of the trial, we became an army determined to expose great sexual assault scandal in sports history, and we succeeded. After 150 of us gave statements on Wednesday, the judge sentenced Nassar to 175 years in prison. When I filed the first police report in August of 2016 against Larry for sexually abusing me when I was a 15-year-old girl and chose to release a very public story detailing what we had done, I felt like a shot in the dark. I came as prepared as possible. I brought medical journals showing what real pelvic floor technique looks like. My medical records would show that Larry had never mentioned that he used such techniques, even though he had penetrated me. The names of three pelvic floor experts ready to testify to police that Larry's treatment was not medical. Other records from a nurse practitioner documenting my disclosures of abuse in 2004. My journals from that time and a letter from a neighboring district attorney vouching for my character. I worried that any less meant I would not be believed, a concern I later learned was merited. My education as a lawyer prepared me for the process, but absolutely nothing could have prepared me for the pain of being the first to go public with my accusations. This is amazing. I lost my church. I lost my closest friends as a result of advocating for survivors who had been victimized by similar institutional failures in my own community. I lost every shred of privacy. When a new friend searched my name online or added me as a friend on Facebook, the most intimate details of my life became available long before we had ever exchanged phone numbers. I avoided the grocery stores on some days to make sure my children didn't see my face on the newspaper or magazine. I was asked questions about things no one should know when I least wanted to talk. And the effort it took to move this case forward, especially at as some called me an ambulance chaser, just looking for a payday, often felt crushing. Man. And I wanted to bring Joan Mills into this because this is kind of what happens, isn't it, Joan? They turn the victim into a criminal. Isn't this pretty common, my dear?
Well, I don't know if it's always that common on an individual basis, because most cases aren't as institutional as this is and as Penn State was. Most cases are an individual child and an individual actor. Multiple perps, multiple victims, or just multiple victims are less common than the daily, everyday fondling, sexual assault, rape, child porn cases.
And this girl, so she comes forward, and immediately she's called an ambulance chaser. As she said, she lost her friends, she lost her church. How and why does that happen, my friend?
I think it's the stigma. I think it's such a taboo subject, even though we know one in four adult females had been victimized in some way from either childhood through high school or college, and we know one out of seven men have been victimized. We still are not comfortable in our society talking about it openly.
And for this girl, she becomes the latest. This happened, by the way, in the Catholic Church when folks came mm-hmm. forward and lost their churches, which is, I guess, mm-hmm. I'm presuming what happened to her, right?
Right, right. You lose your circle. You lose most contact. You lose family members. This is a big divider of families. If the actor is a good family friend or a family relative, an uncle, a grandfather, I've seen families totally divided, and most of the family leaning towards the alleged actor and not the victim.
I can't get past, and I know we've discussed this before, I can't get mm-hmm. past her telling us in this unbelievable story that I'll read further, that she was molested in front of her mother. Her mother was behind a screen, in essence, but that he did this in front of her mother.
He blocked the mother's view, and if you think of the physical dynamics of an adult man and a younger female child, he could block the mother's view of the child's genitalia unless mother moved, and mother clearly didn't move. We cannot give up our children to coaches, to doctors, really to anyone. These are our children, and we have a duty to protect and responsibility. So you don't just... You know, you want to see what they're doing.
But hold on, I don't get
their faces.
You're right. I'm daddy. My daughter's being examined. I'm behind this wall. Quite frankly, what the hell am I supposed to do? Now I'm scared about all this stuff. What am I supposed to do as a parent, Joan?
Well, I think we have to have conversations before an exam, what an exam entails, if it's in a medical setting. I think we can certainly be in the room. Now, teenage girls many times don't want the parent in the room, but the parent has to be given the option. And then there has to be conversation of what happened after the exam, knowing what it was supposed to be, and did it end up being what it was supposed to be. I think we have to be more involved. We just, I don't want to say we don't trust anyone.
Yeah.
But I think we have to be more dutiful and responsible before we turn our children over to anyone.
Do I become that annoying? Hold this for after the break. Do I then become that annoying parent that no one wants to be around because I'm probing every single friggin' thing that a coach does? Hold on. Let's hold that for after the break, all right? Because
sure.
This has scared the daylights out of me. I got to be honest. It's just bizarre. Hey, briefly, because this is a story that's been developing all morning, I laid out some information regarding threats against Pittsburgh Public Schools and a principal and a video that was posted. The video has been sent to me, and it's frightening what this video entails. And I would play it for you, but there's a lot of foul language, and we haven't had time to edit that out. But what the video entails is you have a group of young men playing one of these online video games, one of these violent video games. And in one of those online violent video games, a young man goes into great detail with the other players of how he has a bunch of weapons. He's going to kill a bunch of people at Pittsburgh High School today at lunchtime. And that's why they lock down the schools, and that's why they consider it. And he keeps going on and on and on. And that's why they lock down the schools, and that's why the school district and the Pittsburgh police are all over this morning in this video. And again, a young man actually with the wherewithal to grab onto this video saved it and sent it out to police agencies and to the media. And he was obviously concerned, and good for him. So again, it's one of these group sessions where everybody gets in and plays a video game. And all of a sudden, one of the young men playing the game says, "Hey, Monday noon, I'm going to start shooting people at a Pittsburgh high school." Eesh. So we're jumping around here, but I had to let you know that that video is out there. So back to this column written by one of the gymnasts. This is the young lady, Rachel Den Hollander, who came forward, the first person to come forward in the media. And what it said it did to her: "I lost my church, I lost my closest friends as a result of advocating for survivors who have been victimized by similar institutional failures in my own community. I lost every shred of privacy." She goes on to say, "More than 200 women have now alleged abuse by Larry Nassar. Even more staggering that number is the revelation that at least 14 coaches, trainers, psychologists, or colleagues have been warned of his abuse. What is truly stomach-turning is the realization that a vast majority of those victims were abused after his conduct was first reported by two teenagers to MSU's Michigan State head gymnastics coach as far back as 1997. Joan Mills joining me, who has investigated and been part of and helped thousands and thousands of young folks' children in abuse cases. Okay, Joan, help me. Mm-hmm. How is it that 14 coaches, trainers, and psychologists can hear these warnings of abuse and do nothing? How does that occur, my friend?
Power, money,
okay.
Reputation, NCAA. No one wants to rock the boat. Everyone wants to win, and winning is more important than a few kids along the way. They're counting on their continued silence. They figure they've been silent so far. They're counting on that continued silence, and they're willing to gamble with the kids that are coming down the road that will also be abused. You know, one of the big contrasts, if you think about it, between the Sandusky case at Penn State and this case at Michigan State is the type of kids. The Sandusky victims were kids who had lots of problems,
right.
No dads.
Right.
The mothers were thrilled somebody took an interest in their kids. So you had that type. Michigan State, you have upper middle class, educated families, and gymnastics is an elitist sport. It's not the same as a football kind of sport in a way, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right, of course,
So you have a whole different prototype of victim that this guy took his chance on. And the other thing we've never heard is whether there were any male victims. So whether he's a preferential pedophile where he just picked females of a certain age, or whether there are male victims, because they're much less likely to come forward. It's much more difficult to have male victims come forward. So it'll be interesting as this progresses to hear if he only treated females, or did he treat males, and did he only victimize females? So, I think institutions haven't learned clearly, and as Governor Corbett said the other day on your show, they haven't learned, and I don't know what it takes to make them learn. More sanctions, more taking away trophies, or more money. I don't know what it takes before people will understand that when the whistle blows, we need to stop and look, and professionals need to listen. And that didn't happen, and they failed hundreds of girls and families.
You could have written this column. I thought about you. I was going to call you yesterday. I just didn't want to annoy you, because listen to what she writes. You nailed this. So this comes from, by the way, the first girl to go public in the Indianapolis Star, which broke this story. Okay, so how did this happen? How, for 30 years, did the monster manage to prey on little girls and younger women without being caught? Joan mentioned this the other day. Partly it is because Larry was an expert predator. He was calculating, deliberate, and a master manipulator. Much of the abuse, mine included, took place with our own mothers in the room, their view casually blocked by Larry, his hand hidden under a towel, a sheet, or loose clothing. You said this, that these abusers are intelligent people, right?
Oh, yeah, this isn't a violent attack, and I think we have too much, sometimes a vision of TV, and there's some violent attack going on. It's a much more seductive type of abuse. Not that it's not a very painful event for that child, but the way they go about it is as if something very normal is happening.
Hey, and again, folks, I'm going to get a little vulgar here, but this is the way it is, and this is important. So this young lady said that he probed her anally and in her vagina. Why? And again, I'm the dumbest guy in the room on this stuff, and I'm just so upset about it. Why wouldn't a little girl say, Mom? Why wouldn't she say, Dad? And Mom's right there. Mom, he just put his finger in my anus. Why?
A lot of reasons. She thinks her mother brought her there, so if she's going to complain, she's calling, saying her mother did something wrong.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what's the right thing. She doesn't know if that's what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You don't even know you have these body parts in a way. You're not sure what's happening to you. You certainly don't think it's a sexual thing, because this is the doctor who's going to help you
Excellent.
Win a gold medal.
Excellent.
How is that something sexual?
Excellent.
So how do you know? How do you know? And a lot of athletes are used to a lot of pain, and how do you know whether this is a good or bad thing? But should you tell your parents? Of course you should tell your parents. But there has to be that communication, and it doesn't start that day in the doctor's office.
No. This is all so enlightening to me, and it's so pragmatic. But everything you say now builds a case that's so true. It's a trust. It's institutional. He's the expert. He's the guru.
Yep.
There's the money. There's the commitment. There's the gold medal. And a little girl doesn't know what the hell he's doing. That's just part of the examination the doctor gives me every time he sees me.
Yep. Well, once you achieve the success, once you've gotten what your goal is, and that's the sexual gratification. In many of these cases, Marty, today, and I can tell you, I could tell you cases where we can't get cases to trial because we can't prove the actor was doing this for sexual gratification. And that's what some district attorneys and some counties want, and that's what some investigators want, the proof of sexual gratification. Why else would that person be penetrating that child? Even a non-medical person. So these cases are very difficult. And, you mentioned before about how do you not go crazy or be overprotective with your kids.
Right.
And there is a fine line, and we should all be vigilant, but not paranoid.
Yeah.
You know, you can't see a perp behind every tree. You can't be that paranoid. But you do have to be vigilant, and you have to be open in communication. I mean, my kids later in life said it was like growing up with the FBI, having me do this work and be a mom of two daughters. But I didn't feel they needed to have sleepovers with people if I didn't know the mom's new boyfriend in that house. And they certainly didn't need to go to their coach's home to review film. They can do that on a school property. So there are decisions we make as parents.
I admire the hell out of you. I love all of your advice. I just do. I think it's people should be writing this stuff down. Hang in there. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. referring to this horrendous, massive abuse case out of Michigan State in the Olympics and involving, well, close to 200 women have now alleged abuse by this Dr. Nasser, who was sentenced to up to 175, a life sentence and death sentence. So the author, who is Rachel Den Hollander, man, this is a courageous woman. It just takes so much courage. So she goes on to say, but Larry's cunning is only a small part of this story because most pedophiles present a wholesome persona. They are able to ingratiate themselves into communities. Research shows that pedophiles are also reported at least several times on average before adults take allegations of abuse seriously and act on them. In many ways, the sexual assault scandal that was 30 years in the making was only a symptom of a much deeper cultural problem, the unwillingness to speak the truth against one's own community. Amazing. The result of putting reputation and popularity ahead of girls and young women. The vile stories you heard in that courtroom this week, all of which could have been prevented. Now that the world has been transfixed by our case, we must make sure not even one more young woman is preyed upon as I was. The first step toward challenging the culture that led to this atrocity is to hold enablers of abuse accountable. There is much that needs to be done legislatively, including extending and removing the statute of limitations on criminal civil charges related to sexual assault, and laws and ensuring truth in sentencing so that dangerous offenders are not released early to damage more children. Most important, we need to encourage and support those brave enough to speak out. Predators rely on community protection to silence victims and keep them in power. Far too often, our commitment to our political party, our religious group, our sport, our college, or a prominent member of our community causes us to choose to disbelieve or turn away from the victim. Far too often, it feels easier and safer to see only what we want to see. Fear of jeopardizing some overachieving politician. Overreaching, I apologize. Religious, financial, or other ideology, or just losing friends or status leads to willful ignorance of what is right in front of our own eyes in the shape and form of innocent and vulnerable children. Ask yourself, how much is a child worth? Every decent human being knows the answer to that question. Now it is time to act like it. Could have been written by Joan Mills. This is exactly what you say, Joan, that they don't want to risk losing anything. So they just feel as if the best thing to do, I don't know why this isn't coming up, but I can't get it, so I'm going to try this. Right, Joan? This is exactly what you say.
Well, it's a trade-off. And, they make that decision. And a group of people in a room generally make those decisions when it's institutional abuse.
Yeah.
That they are going to trade off those few little people for the greater good, as they see it, of their institution, of their reputation, of their money, whatever it may be. Those are expendable. They're just some little people. And after all, who's going to believe little people against university presidents and well-known people? It takes, we've interviewed 27,000 cases for 30 years in the city of Pittsburgh, and how many people know what it even happens every day? That we're in five counties. We have satellites in all our regional counties, Fayette, Westmoreland, Beaver. We're seeing kids every single day, and families are being ruined every single day. But go to a courtroom on those cases, they're empty courtrooms.
Well,
and nothing against dogs, Marty, but go to a courtroom where there's animal abuse and the room's packed.
Interesting. The very next page in the New York Times comes this from Frank Bruni, a renowned reporter and columnist. And the headline reads, Larry Nasser is a familiar monster. A doctor's harrowing abuse of gymnasts fits a pattern among child molesters. You said this last week. There is an incident of abuse happening right now. I mean, this just mm-hmm. continues. This monster is out there roaming and roving, is it not?
It is. And one of the common questions I've always gotten is, well, don't these fathers just want to lash out and just kill these people when they do these things to their children? And out of 27,000 cases, I can tell you maybe in a dozen times out of all that, did we ever have a strong concern that there'd be an act of violence against the actor? One was a Pittsburgh Steeler who broke two chairs in my office when we gave him the sad, sad news about his little girls. But overall, no, I think this, the state of shock that parents are in, the guilt. Parents feel guilty for everything that happens to our children, whether they fall and skin their knee, whatever happens. And something of this gravity just paralyzes parents when they get that bad news.
And three institutions that similar stories have been told about, Boy Scouts of America, Catholic Church, and Penn State University. All institutions highly regarded in America today, and folks frozen in fear. It's frightening. And the takeaway I do want, folks, we don't want folks to be paranoid, Joan. We just don't. But they got to be vigilant.
Kids have to be kids and live their lives.
But we have to be vigilant. Fine line, my dear. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Sure.
You are absolutely
have
the best.
Day.
You too. We'll be right back, folks.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.